Hello and welcome to Hacks and Flacks with me, Petri Hoskin. Hacks and Flacks is the only series where you'll get the inside scoop on how journalist hacks and the flacks of government and business work behind the scenes to decide which stories you'll be reading with your morning coffee, and perhaps more importantly, how they keep certain headlines off the front pages. What happens if a public figure is a subject of a salacious story? When does a scandal make or break a career? And how do you really know what is or isn't fake news? All these subjects and a whole lot more will be explored by me and a regular panel of hacks and flacks, ready to spill the beans and tell us how the sausages get made. Flacks like former government advisers Giles Kenningham.
Hello.
And Andrew McDougall.
Hello.
Plus hacks like Mick Booker.
Hello.
So now all the gang's here, let's delve into the world of hacks and flacks.
So, I rang them up, told them, thank you very much for that. 10 minutes later, I didn't have access to Katie Price's Facebook account and they never spoke to me again about it.
Really?
Not a thing.
Hello and welcome back to Hacks and Flacks with me, Petri Hoskin. I'm thrilled to be flanked by the full panel this week as I'm joined by Andrew McDougall, Giles Kenningham and Mick Booker. Hello.
Hey.
Oh, the enthusiasm. I'm going to put you to work straight away and it's time to flex your hack and flack muscles for us as we look at the different ways a PR can possibly snuff out a bad story to stop it hitting the headlines, or how a newsroom might read between the lines of a statement and put out their own story anyway. Andrew, can PR outfox a newsroom?
100% of the time. And see, if we're not, you're not doing it right. No, yeah.
You can't. I can see through you lot easy. I only stop when I get a legal letter. Well, nothing. A statement.
Well, that's why we can pull that out of the drawer first.
Listen, broke news, man. Here's a legal letter.
My best legal letter I ever got was it was unfortunately it was after publication, but it was I did a story about Brad Pitt and Jennifer Aniston.
Was it true?
Well, here we go. It was early in my Daily Star career, and it may have been influenced by something I read in a weekly magazine. So I wrote this story about how they'd been holidaying separately. So we wrote this, and obviously it was wink, wink, nudge, nudge. There's a problem there. So we printed that, and then the legal letter came the week after. It was faxed as well. There were good old days when you got a fax. And it was about 5 sheets of it from some top LA firm threatening the Daily Star and me personally. And it was co-addressed with them on it as well. So I had this legal statement. It was copied to them. Brad and Jen had seen my name on a legal letter, and I was really
amazing.
Excited. Apart from the 30-odd thousand pound that we ended up having to pay them. But for that one moment,
I
was on
charity.
It was great.
They might have discussed you in bed together.
Yes. You were right.
Hold on, let's check. Are they still together? Give me my money back, Brad and Jen.
You were right eventually.
So when you write these PR press releases or whatever it is, you know, it's disguised thinly as, what is going through your mind? Are you trying to outfox a newsroom?
Well, I mean, we're trying to trick them into covering a news if it's a press release, but who writes those anymore? But if we're approached by somebody like Mick with, we know something about something. And sometimes somebody like Mick will give you the full story and go, look, this is what we have. Deal with it. And sometimes it's just a speculative here and this, blah, blah, blah. And so then you begin the dance of what do we have to put down on paper and what do we have to go back with. And it really is a question of ultimately on our end knowing what's happened. And that's not – you think that's like a nailed-on certainty that we know what's happened. But sometimes clients just lie to you. You know, especially if somebody like Mick comes out here and you're not together with your wife. And you go, well, is that true? Are you not together with your wife? Oh, no, everything's fine. And then you go back, everything's fine. And then, well, you lied to me? So, I mean, that's the kind of stuff is that ultimately the quality of any output that we put down on paper to give to someone like Mick depends on us having the ability and that relationship with the people we represent to go, like, you have to tell, even if we don't say the truth, you've got to, or the full truth, you got to tell me everything there is to know about this. Because I don't know what Mick knows. And Mick might know the whole truth. He might know a bit of it. Oftentimes, it's just a sliver of something that feels like it needs to be pulled on.
But therein is the point in case. Do you actually need to respond? I mean, too often, you see people falling into the trap of denying something publicly, which allows a journalist to go, last night, X person was forced to deny. You go, I'm not giving you anything on the record. I'll give you a legal letter to tell you that this is categorically untrue. End of story. And you see people, you know, when there isn't necessarily a story, there's a rumor, there's speculation, and they allow the journalist then to write a story by putting something on the record. And that is a commentary of journalists. You just need a statement, just need a statement.
It's but like, that ruins the sport of it, doesn't it?
Yeah, but that's the whole game of it. Yeah. But then also there's a point to Andrew says, like, they may have a, you know, it may be something they have like a slither of, like, about, you know, if it's a private life issue, and you go like, well, you're not going to respond, right? Because they haven't got enough information to go on. They'll be trying to kick the tires, just sort of go on that fishing expedition.
But I remember on the Daily Star Sunday, we once had some information about the family setup of a very big name, international and celebrity.
Right.
And we put it to the PR people at the time.
Mm.
And then they came back to us. I mean, this information at the time, we were a little bit unsure of the source anyway. It might have been a bit dodgy. So we were a little bit worried in that regard. But then the very big PR person came back who was looking after this very big celebrity. And the good thing about it was, it's when the big name PR comes on, the one, the proper old school one, and effectively threatens violence or ruining your entire career. That is the ones that
it's
I will.
That is a red flag.
That is a red flag. But there was some, particularly in the noughties and obviously around, you know, 80s, 90s, noughties, who there were still a few of those big PRs around who could do that and also give you the idea that if it's not, you know, violence, it might also be the end of your career. Or they could, within your group, if you had, like, we had OK Magazine in that group. So these big celebrities, they like to go in OK Magazine. And, you know, our bosses, they like to have these big celebrities in there. And if this celebrity doesn't like you anymore, they're not coming in that magazine anymore. So would you like to explain that to your bosses? Would you like a job on Monday morning? So it was those, that was the sport of it. So just say nothing. Come on.
I dream of having those conversations. I'll keep you out of that. That doesn't exist.
Did it work?
Yes.
Yeah,
it did work. No, as I said, though, I do believe still that the information we were given, though it was very good information, it was too good information and may have been obtained illegally by whoever gave it to us at the same time.
What was it about the setup?
It was about, I think it was about money in the family, and there was an allegation of fraud, and I think there was also an allegation of benefit fraud in there as well. So it was, but again, when you get that sort of information, and when I was on the Daily Star Sunday, it wasn't, because we were lower in the pecking order to some of the, like, News of the World still going, and Mail on Sunday and things like that, we always wondered, well, why have we got this now?
Mm. You know? And not the others.
Yeah. So
it's been passed around.
It's been passed around a little bit, yes. And they've probably had the same threat from the same PR people and done the same thing.
Giles, do you think because you're ex-journalist that you are better at writing a PR statement than your colleague, Andrew McDougall?
I don't think that necessarily means you are going to be better at doing it. No. Not at all.
No.
But I think
it must
it
help,
could be.
Doesn't it?
I think I understand. You understand, like, the angles of where people are going to come from.
Yeah.
Also, there's all that classic thing about certain language can be coded. People can read between the lines there. I mean, the one thing I always think is when people sort of say, oh, you know, I need to clarify something. You're just like, That is basically means you're U-turning, climbing down.
Retiring for family
reasons. And I hate the use of that word, clarifying. Mm. Just shit or get off the fence. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think it's almost disingenuous sometimes when people are using that term. And it's become so cliched. I think that's the thing, is just avoid the cliches.
And every hack worth their salt knows when they've seen that language. You know, it's kind of the, it's not quite that, what was it, the famous definition of pornography is like, I can't tell you, but I know when I see it. And you know when a statement lights your story on fire because they use language that, you know, if you can be direct in a statement, you're direct. Like, this is bullshit and here's why. If you're responding at all.
I've just thought,
and then if you start using euphemisms or like sentences that are like 52 words.
That.
Yeah, I don't recognize that allegation.
Yeah, I don't recall that.
Glasses on. Go on. Look at the other angle.
Yeah, exactly. I don't recall that characterization of events. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Which is a non-denial, basically.
But there was another one where we got the verbal comeback. But we had a picture at the Daily Star. And again, this is slightly tinged with tragedy, this one. And you look back on where the job you did at the time. But in the mid-noughties, we had a picture of Peaches Geldof. And she had some tube out of her nose and was at a party. Our reporter was at the same party. And
just so, by serendipity? Or,
by serendipity. Right. And took the picture. Just at that moment, she appeared to be snorting something. So that ended up on the front page of the Daily Star Sunday. And I think the headline was, in the end, it did get to publication. It was, I think it was, Who's a Snorty Girl Peaches? Things didn't go particularly well in her life up to that point anyway. And subsequently, you know, she died at a young age. But that day when we put the call in, I think we got, I think it was Matthew Freud at the time, mm-hmm. who was, again, one of the big beasts of PR. And it was, he was intimating certain things. Obviously, Bob Geldof wouldn't be very happy with the story.
They're going to cut access, right?
And but at the same time, we never got access.
Right, so you had...
And it's not as if we were horse trading over anything else. We had this story and we said, obviously, we're concerned about Peaches and yeah. this story. That's why we're doing it in the public interest. And again, we probably wouldn't be able to do that story 5 years, 10 years on after that.
Yeah, I was just going to say, if...
But it was like there was the coded threat of, you know, Bob... You know,
what was but it if was, Freud Bob had just said to you, look, you're right to be concerned about her. She is... Please don't... Her mental health is struggling. Yeah. Would you have pulled it?
I wasn't on the end of the phone. I was deputy editor at the time, so I think the editor, Gareth Morgan, at the time would have taken that call, and he can't exactly know what was in that telephone call. But I think at that time as well, it was a great showbiz story as well.
There's that part
of your brain as well. I think it's a great showbiz story, public interest. So, you know, maybe if that case had been pleaded a bit more, and I think, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 years later, that story wouldn't have got in at all. But it was in that time when those showbiz stories were around. And at that point, Peaches, again, she wasn't the tragic figure at the time, or it wasn't like Amy Winehouse. There was about the same time as Amy Winehouse as well. Every time she was out, there was pictures
of
her.
Or these Callum Best. Yeah, era stuff.
That sort of thing. So it was more, I wouldn't say it was an innocent time, but it was clearly a time of, wow, look at this young set going around doing all this sort of thing, and we were party to it as well. So again, maybe these days, if they'd have said, well, the mental health of this person is very, then we wouldn't, you know, we
did
really,
you ever have
really,
people accidentally confirm a story to you? Or like put an extra piece of information like, oh my God, that story's got even better now, you know.
Not offhand, I wish I had. Have you ever accidentally done that yourself from the other side of things? Have you, oops.
Well, no, well, I know.
Yeah, David Cameron is about to declare war on China.
I know of a special advisor who was working for a cabinet minister, and the allegation was that the cabinet minister was sleeping with a member of staff. And the special advisor time says to the journalist, oh no, that can't be true because this member of staff stays around my flat during the week. And the journalist's like, oh, does she? Oh, really? This makes it even better. Do you know, thinking like menage a trois, like what's been going on now? As it transpires, the story was true. I mean, yeah. But yeah, sort of accidentally walked into it.
I had one where we had drafted a statement to share around, and somebody on our staff had the same surname as the reporter and even the same first initial to the name.
Oh, no.
And so their name auto-completed in and they got the draft statement, and that took every bit of relationship I have with the reporter to say, look, you will get a statement. This is not it. This is the draft one.
Oh, like, my God.
It's not going to materially change, but the words will change. So please bear with me. And that's when we send a directive going around, like, if you have journalist contacts in your BlackBerry, all cap them. So you can see at a glance if you filled in the wrong one, because it'll show up all caps in the address.
Did this journalist support you in this?
Yeah, they did, because the statement, it was just draft. It wasn't that we weren't going to deny it or whatever. We weren't, it wasn't like the whole back and forth about this is bullshit. You know, it was like, they have us, here's the statement we're going to put out. And it just, the draft got sent before
it
had been
approved.
Was
it radically different though, the final version?
The ordering of arguments and the sequence. So they could have been snotty and said, well, first they were going to say this and then changed it to that. But materially it was the same thing. Hmm. It was just a question of like softening this edge.
Yeah, I was trying to go the other route.
That was painful.
I was trying to go the other route. And I once, there was a time when I was a Facebook friend of Katie Price, Jordan. And this was at the height of, you know, when she was, after I'm a Celebrity, then she was going off with Alex Reed, then she was flying around with Peter Andre. And I tried to be friends with people like you at one point, right? I thought, this will get me in with, and I think it was the outside organisation,
right,
when they were looking after her and they were at their height. There was something, I can't remember what it was, but it was a quite a concerning thing that she wrote on Facebook, some big arch thing that, you know, that there was like doom laden about her, and I thought, oh, what I'll do is I'll tell the PR, they'll stop, that they'll get it shut down, and she'll get it taken down, and they'll be my best friend and give me stories for life. So I rang them up, told them, oh, thank you for your concern about, thank you very much for that. 10 minutes later, I didn't have access to Katie Price's Facebook account, and they never spoke to me again about it.
Really?
Not a thing. Not even a thank you. There I was, trying to be a good guy.
But have you ever used a personal contact in that way? That you've got some information, and would you? I mean, if you were, you know, great mates with somebody extremely, well, you possibly are, where somebody extremely famous, and the story happened in front of you, would you protect them, or would you reveal it as a journalist, as a hack?
As a human being, luckily, I don't think I've been in that position. But I think it would be, you know, if I again saw something on a Facebook page of someone who was famous, but and then you could see if there was a way, if there was a story that they had on there that wasn't necessarily about them, but someone else, then I maybe think about it, you know, and betray them in that way. But if it was them directly, you know, I'm a cautious
man's got to eat.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think that I'm not.
But I'm a human
that.
Being.
I'm really
first and foremost. I'm a human being, rather.
Yeah, but I mean like,
I'm not a born journalist.
But the great story, a brilliant story that you could.
You know, if it was going to take me all the way to the Pulitzer, of course I would. Yeah. But that was I knew from an early age that was never going to happen.
It's like you could actually make quite a bit of side money in a job like ours in government, briefing out stories, and like, and I'm sure some people do, but like,
have you ever done it?
That's why he's got that pair of diamond shoes on.
No, but it's one of those things, like the stuff you do see is like that, like an offhand comment, the cabinet minister around the cabinet table. You know, you could do so many people, but nor should you. Like you need that, especially like that release valve, black humor, all that stuff. There's so much stuff that if somebody briefed out a comment, and Lord knows I've made these comments, you know, that you say in the heat of the moment just because it's so difficult and you blow off steam. And then if somebody were to say, well, so-and-so said this in the room, you'd be like, well, yeah, that's true, but you have to understand, blah, blah, and then you're explaining, and then you're dead.
But, Giles,
and then you're putting out a statement that tries to say nothing.
It's an interesting point, actually. Is that more likely to happen these days in a briefing? Pressurised jobs, you're going to say stuff, you're going to use language that you would never use publicly. But people are now recording, they're taking photographs, even in a briefing. It's like, oh, I could sell that.
Private WhatsApp conversation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, is that more likely to happen?
Yeah, I mean, you know, take cabinet in this country, right? Like the amount of information that leaks out of cabinet, which is meant to be highly confidential, it's almost scary. You're getting to the point because this is happening. There's going to be less candor in policy making.
Yeah.
In the conversations we need to have behind closed doors. We all say stuff that we wouldn't want necessarily repeated verbatim in public. But now I think it's so difficult to actually keep information confidential. It's a real, real struggle.
I remember you telling me once that I think Cameron's cabinet was watertight until a certain person ended up in cabinet or started being someone who could visit cabinet and some old blabbermouth, and then it kept on getting out.
The 8:30 meetings in the morning, which would basically be with him and a number of people, relatively tight meetings. They never leaked. Then all of a sudden there was a minister who started attending. And like there was kind of like sacrilege that stuff never, ever leaked. Do you know what I mean? And it was just like obvious where the sort of... where the leaking was coming from. But yeah, I mean, that was the classic thing with the coalition government. Stuff would just leak left, right and centre all over the place. And often the Lib Dems would brief blue on blue stories. So it was like Tories having a row with each other to sort of try and destabilize us. And yeah, it was so interesting that for that year after the coalition ended, like how stable, probably boring for people like Mick government was because it wasn't very leaky. I mean, all that stuff which come out about Boris Johnson, right, and his financial arrangement, that wouldn't have been known to more than about 3-4 people initially, which basically shows you how leaky parts of the civil service must be, how emboldened people must feel.
But
like,
are they selling it?
I would think.
Are they making money out of it?
They can't do. I don't think you can do these things because if they are, they're effectively breaking the law, aren't they? Because if payment, also journalists can't. Yeah. They're not meant to be able to pay public officials. That is corruption. Mm. So, I think once, and you know, if they are, then they're obviously treading a very, very thin line. I think it's more a question of them just being emboldened and you know, their perspective is that this government's in its dying days, or you know, like sod them, they're going to be out. We want them out because I would be really, really like worried, pissed off. Like the amount of really tight confidential information.
I read that as Sunak's people going, I don't want Johnson coming back, so I'm going to hold him below the waterline.
And they've managed to keep it quiet, haven't the Sunak's people? Since he got in, there's not been an awful lot, has there?
There's nothing the Hacks and Flacks team enjoy more after a lively record than relaxing with a delicious beer. And as we're a generous bunch, we want you to get in on that action. And so we're offering you the chance of grabbing a free case of craft ales from Beer 52. Yes, you can claim a free case of exceptional beers by simply going to www.beer52.com/hacks and cover the meagre postage costs of £5.95 to claim your free case now. Each month, Beer 52 send their members a case of unique and varied beers from a different part of the world, which includes their ever-insightful Ferment magazine, where you can learn about the breweries, regions and the wonderful world of beer whilst enjoying a phenomenal selection of fresh and tasty craft ales. And as fellow newshounds, I'm sure you'll love learning what's new in beer as much as we do. And there's also a couple of delicious snacks to enjoy too. Also, if dark beer is not your thing, you can choose the light-only case. And even if, after all that, you're still unsatisfied, you can simply pause or cancel any time. So why not join us for a drink and sip along while you listen to the next episode of Hacks and Flacks by going to www.beer52.com/hacks to claim your free case now. That's beer52.com/hacks. Cheers.
One of the things you have to think about when you're putting something together is who knows what and where.
Yeah.
And that's half the battle of like a statement when you know there's a crowd of 30 people that might know it. You have to be very careful about what you put in there. Because if you put in something that is not true, there will be more than one person that could whisper to someone like Mick, well, that's actually not true. And so you have to do that balance of what can we get away with? What do other people know? What will satisfy the inquiry that's come into the office? And very hard to put that together in real time to kind of, you have to work all of that.
And then it's just statements which just beg more questions. So you've moved the story on. There's like 30 other questions we can now ask about this. Yeah. Back to that age old cliche, dump everything out at once, but be really careful.
So is it better for you guys though, in your experience, if someone like me rings up with a story, is it you go off and write a statement or is it just try and batter me down by ringing me and talking to me? As a human being.
But it depends what it is, doesn't it? It's on a case-by-case basis.
All right, if it's a statement, do you want...
I think it's both, though. I think it's like, look, this is the point, right? We're going to put the statement together, but I know you are, and we're also going to talk you around the issue off the record to help your understanding and guide you around stuff.
You're helping me. I'm here. I've been here. That's the PR.
But, you know, it's actually... But that's the point. It's like you don't might want to put everything in there, but...
I don't want to waste
you want to give the context. I remember having this conversation with Janice going, I don't want to hear it. I don't want it. Just give me a statement. Give me a statement. You know what I mean?
No, but and that is, I think, in this day and age now, less of a thing where you can have those conversations. Everybody gets so uptight about can we, should we, shouldn't we? And I should always be able to pick up the phone and go, look, I've got this. Let's get on the phone for 2 seconds. And if you still want a statement after that, we can do a statement. You know as well as anybody that people often give you stuff that's not the full picture because they want to do the person that I represent. And it might be fair, it might be not, but we're not, that might have been said, but did you know that the person in that meeting who might be the person you're talking to did it for this reason and said that? And you go, okay, I see what's being done here. And maybe it's still a story for you and you still want to do it. But if you're fair-minded, you might go, well, I see what's happening there. And so you have to have that. You can't do these things at a distance, especially when the stakes are high and it's a sensitive issue. You can't not talk to each other. It's like any couple.
Yeah.
You know, you can't not talk to each other and expect things are going to work out. But you have to have that relationship where you can go back and forth and then you've decided it's happening anyway.
But then
we sit down at a keyboard and figure out what we want to say.
Do you do it as a team as well? Yeah, you know, when you're writing this statement, is there
Giles massages think, my shoulders I'm, and he goes, okay, well, you can do this.
I'm better at writing statements than you.
This is the problem, is like would be like the writing statements by a committee. So then it just gets completely butchered. And basically doesn't meet any of the objectives. There are also the issue, Meander, so you can see statements which have been lawyered within an inch of their lives or have had too many people. So I always think it's better that perhaps one or two people sit with it. Then maybe the lawyer needs to look at it as well, depending on the circumstances.
What about the subject of the statement as well. Oh, yeah. The person involved. Yeah,
typically,
are they good at telling the truth to you in the initial?
I don't think. Well, it's a classic thing. You can't advise yourself when you're in a crisis and you need other people. Yeah. So they can feed into it, but sometimes there is that element of self denial. This is when we were just saying in a previous episode, you need to have that blunt conversation, something that British people aren't very good at, and saying, look, this is a effing problem. And you're going to have to take this.
You never want to be in the position where you, as the flat sense, the hack, knows more than you do about your own. And in government, that happens all the time because government's so broad that the chances are you might. But if you're representing a person, say a celebrity or high net worth individual, and you have to be able to go, like, even if we don't say this out loud, say all the quiet bits here.
Yeah.
Because I can't tell you how to thread this or cross this without knowing where I'm going to fall down.
I just want to jump in here now because you mentioned that the relationship between Hack and Flack is a couple. But in modern day, it's a throuple because you've got the public now who are tweeting. And so it is not the perfect conversation anymore that a Hack can have with a Flack or a Flack can have with a Hack, because there is that third person in the relationship that might be pouring out stuff that you want denied, but you want confirmed. So how do you play as a throuple?
Yeah, and often it's way more than that. And that's the point about there might be 30 people that have this information. Yeah. And it used to be the case that none of those 30 had a microphone or a route in because they didn't know a journalist. They didn't. But now it's just a DM on Twitter.
Yeah.
Or if you're Dominic Cummings, a 55,000 word Substack post that you charge people for, but whatever works. But yeah, it is that point. And there is so much input to Mixdesk that to triage that and to actually work it through, that the cacophony works both ways. And sometimes that actually helps. If it's like, okay, Shouty McShoutster on Twitter says this, okay, yeah, run with that. Like, who is that person? Mm. Maybe sometimes they do know that person. But yeah, that's another consideration that you have to put in there. And it's not easy.
Do you ever issue a statement from just something from Twitter? Would you ever do that?
Would you mean use Twitter as a platform to put it out?
No, that the only place that the allegation is on Twitter. Would you there then ignore it and say, look, this is just Twitter? Or nowadays, do you have to go, actually, we have to respond to this?
It just depends, doesn't it? Whether it's, as you said, Barry in his boxer shorts in Darlington eating Doritos.
There's currently a lot of speculation about the reason why a Labour MP has been suspended, isn't there? And there is a lot of that on Twitter at the moment. And you've got a lot of, again, armchair detectives saying, well, this is because of X, this is because of Y. And yet there still hasn't been.
I think you'd be very careful not to be pressured to answer. I mean, as it depends on a case-by-case basis, but to be drawn into this, to actually adding more fuel to the fire versus a couple of individual bloggers in their bedroom versus stuff. But yeah, I mean, if it's got a legal implication, if it's clear cut, they're bang to rights, you might want to pile in.
Yeah, well, there's one in the case happening in Toronto now where the mayor of Toronto, I don't know what it is with Toronto and mayors, they had Rob Ford, the cocaine addict. Now they have John Tory, who's a straight-laced businessman who has resigned because he was having an affair with a staffer who was 30 years younger than him, and he's been married for 40 years. And Twitter is alive with her name, which journalists aren't reporting yet because...
Why aren't they reporting the name?
Well, he's resigned.
Right.
And... it was consensual, so I think in Canadian press are
that would get named. They get pussycats. Named here.
Like, oh yeah, no, here there'd be like everybody be dying. I mean, out really on it.
If it was a moose, then
or there's maple syrup.
An actual moose, yeah. Right.
No, but the name is out there, and euphemisms are out there.
She's people... employed on the public payroll, right?
Oh yeah.
So there's definitely a public interest.
Yeah. No, and the fact that there had been an affair. Mm. And he has resigned about it. The Toronto Star reported the story, but they haven't named her.
Is she going to get named?
I doubt she will.
Is she going to keep her job?
Well, and I think she's since moved on, so she's not in the public service anymore.
Right.
John's just furious about it.
I was just thinking, my favourite statement was, I think it was after, the Rebecca Lewes thing with David Beckham.
Yeah.
And that splash there. Again, that was a bit of a surprise that morning because I think the first edition of the News of the World didn't have that story on it. So I went to bed, very happy. Went to the newsagent the next day. Oh, holy cow, what's that? I remember that their statement was, I think they were talking to their lawyers about it, weren't they? And I think technically they still are.
I never used to always say that. Issue a statement saying we're considering taking legal action because when you don't, everyone thinks you're guilty and there might be a reason why you're not. But don't issue that as a statement.
If you're going to whip it out,
the amount
out.
The of people.
For all we know, though, the conversation could still be going on. They haven't got to the end of the conversation yet.
Going on.
Reading between the lines, you can see a story, yeah. Right? When you've been around the block a few times, you can see it. Is it almost by osmosis, or you don't even realise why you can read between the lines? Or is there specific words, phrases, and structure that you would look for?
It's the way a story's written as well. Yeah. When you write a story and you can't quite say the truth. That's one of the fun bits of tabloid journalism, is writing it in such a way as to tell the story, but without telling the story.
Go on, give us some examples of some of the phraseology.
Well, because you don't know, you've got it in you. Yeah. But then you're suddenly writing in a tabloid style in a tabloid newsroom in the early 2000s, you think, hang on, this is like pure spun gold coming out of my fingertips. Yeah. But it was just sitting amongst, I mean, I'd been working in Leeds, working with a few big old chunks of coal up there. And then I came down to London and all of a sudden I'm with these professionals and I'm reading how they're doing. I'm seeing how they're doing and getting these nudge, wink stories. And you think, this is brilliant. And then you're writing this stuff. And you think, oh, I can do this. And then it's on the page 3 of
it's
the
like
Daily Star.
The confirmed bachelor on a set, or the lifelong bachelor.
I always like tabloids from an onlooker. Say,
yeah, onlooker.
Yeah. Who? You use the word onlooker in everyday life. No one's an onlooker.
One pal said.
Yeah. He's a pal. What did you say that for? No pal say that.
If you say that in Scotland, you're about to get punched.
What the hell's a pal, by the way? Yeah, so, oh no, but it's, you can.
The statement's got lots of adverbs or something, then you know it's like, you know. Yeah.
But it was like, always.
You know, if it uses the big, long, complicated word instead of the simple word, then you know that somebody's trying to spin
you. I saw exotic.
I love the word exotic.
Yeah, exotic life. Exotic life. Yeah, that was always
flamboyant. There's another
flamboyant
one.
Was a great word. What else? Yeah. There?
Well, the only time
the very happily married star.
The only time you hear the word lag is when it's in a newspaper.
Yeah, yeah.
I love that word. Yeah. It's my favourite. Lag.
Not using all that. I missed that now.
But did you see the tweets? It was very interesting when after Nicola Sturgeon resigned, the non-tweet tweets were absolutely brilliant. From Rishi Sunak, it was, Nicola Sturgeon
has
he was just basically said, she was a long-standing, and it's like, that's a
thank
fact. That's not an
service.
Opinion. Yeah. And then Labour now stands ready to help the people of Scotland. And the people reading that might think, oh, that's a nice thing for him to say. But it was quite clearly a party political tweet. And a lot of other people, Theresa May as well, her tweet, and it's so interesting to see politicians or their spads or whoever's running their account now with these non-tweets.
Yeah. Well, I've just thought of one about Meghan as well. She's always demanding, isn't she?
She's always demanding.
Nightmare. my favourite statement I ever drafted. So we were in office when Hugo Chavez died, the former dictator of Venezuela. And our bureaucrats at our equivalent of FCO sent this flowery statement over that the cabinet office officials kind of passed along to me. And like, what do you think about this? And the foreign minister's political staff fighting, you're going to love this statement that comes over. And it was just that he was like a leader for his people and stuff. I'm like, you do realize who you're talking about here. So I erased it all and just put good riddance, -30, and sent it back. Just not meant to like actually put that out, but just to put a rocket up their backsides. I'm going, what the fuck are you doing? This guy is a dick. He's like a dick to his people. And you're like, you know, and so it went back good riddance, and I get this panic phone call from the civil service equivalent going, what? We saw your statement. I'm like, well, who do you think told me to write that back to you? I'm like hinting that I was just having fun with them as the prime minister's saying, was it? Well, we can't put this out if we've been on the phone with Caracas. And it's like,
oh, Caracas.
I'm telling you to actually do this.
Caracas.
But I was just telling them to basically give me a statement like the tweets you were just talking about where we say something without
saying it.
With the messages being, it's a good thing you're gone.
Yeah.
Although Maduro hasn't really been much better, has
he? You don't want to stop those moose imports to Caracas, do
you? You're obsessed with moose.
There's a lot of meese.
Is it moose? Like
big meese in Canada.
Is it meeses, mooses?
Well, I don't know.
I'm going to think about antlers.
You are right that Foreign Office spend a lot of time just not wanting to offend people.
Well, no, they represent the other countries. No, you represent us over there. You don't give me their view. Like, that's not what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
But that means, like, I don't know what departments you had, but like foreign affairs was easily the one where you're just like, no, you're on our side of the table.
Yeah.
Like, what are you like? If they do something bad, we should say they did something bad. Not like, well, what they're trying to say here. Like, I know you're supposed to like whisper, like interpret it, but when we communicate, it is us to them. And it's like when Castro died, you know, another dick. Dictator, yeah. Right? And because Justin Trudeau's father had been a great friend to Fidel Castro, and there's a picture of Justin Trudeau as a young boy, and you know, and then Trudeau's brother put out this statement of he was a lion of a man, and the Canadian government statement came out not too short of that. And I just, like, I remember I was over here at that time, I just started vomiting, like, uncontrollably. I was like, what, like, who is me in that job going, that's okay, we can put that out, no problem giving a tongue bath to a dictator because Justin happens to know him, but there he's a blowjob on paper, and you're like, don't do that, or at least do it for Obama, everybody likes Obama, you don't do it for Castro.
Let's turn our attention to some notorious PR disasters from over the years, right? Because there's quite a few to choose from, even over the last few weeks. Mick.
Hello.
For you, what has been an incredible disaster? And could it have been helped by good PR?
No, well, the biggest one that I think we've talked about before is Gerald Ratner.
Yeah.
Now, when he had Ratner's and it was at the height of its powers in the 80s, yeah. I think it was. People would go to it. People would get a little bit. It was the 80s Pandora, isn't it?
Possibly, low-end jewelry.
He was asked about how can you get, you've got this tray, you've got these decanters, $4.95. How can you do it? And he said, because it's crap. That's a crap. That's why we can do it. It's a lot of old crap. So he realised that might have been a problem, and then he was on.
Didn't
walking.
He say something about a sandwich? You could buy.
He said the same price as a prawn sandwich, and yeah. The prawn sandwich would last just a little bit longer.
Did he say that all? It was in a speech, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Did he say it all in one speech? Did he?
I think it was all in one speech. Yeah.
It was to his own company, wasn't it?
Yeah, or something like that. Some big.
So he had to go on Wogan the next night. Like that dates it, doesn't it? To say actually, you know what I meant. No disrespect to the people.
When you say what I meant to say, that's another. What the Prime Minister meant to say there was.
But yeah, some people can't help but be themselves. But he was this larger-than-life businessman, wasn't he? He got a little bit too ahead of himself. Yeah. He's living the high life. And sometimes, you know, it can bite you on the backside, can't it? When you think, oh, everyone's in on the joke. They all know it's not the greatest thing. And that's what he was saying, wasn't he? It's just affordable luxury. But it came out. And in those days, you know, the media, there wasn't social media then. It just got reported in all those big newspapers, sold millions of copies. That's why he had to go on Wogan the next day and then try and find it.
Even that's been known as doing a Ratner.
Is there any way you could have stepped in and helped after that statement?
Because did he actually fully apologise?
I think he did he was flagellated, yeah, for years though. Afterwards, it ruined the business, ruined him, and he was still on the outskirts of the business community.
Like, the only way out of that was if he had to resign straight away.
Mm.
Yeah, but protect the business.
But it was his business, yeah. Wasn't it?
Exactly. And,
but
it was Ratner. That's what made it worse.
It was Gerald Ratner.
His name next to it, and so you couldn't put distance. So as if it had been like a faceless chief exec, you probably could have just got rid of him.
Is there anything
or
that you could
just
have done?
Do, like, put everything on sale 50% the next
like damage,
2 weeks?
You're in a damage limitation situation here. Is get him out and just, you know, have someone else in. And then hopefully, by nature of employing someone else, you'd have to have, like, big ticket name, which lent credibility to the brand, which got it back up and running. Doing that, I think it's a classic damage limitation, move quickly.
It ended up changing its name, I think, the jewellery chain.
Did it go into liquidation?
I think it's down.
It's one of those things to pick up in the earlier part of the conversation where just the dynamics of how information moves now. Because even, I bet you inside that business, people had heard him say that kind of stuff before and it never came out.
And even if the public is in on the joke, when
you say the quiet part out loud,
yeah,
that's when the mystique kind of goes.
So somebody should have said to him, that difficult conversation, don't ever say that.
No, if you hear that loose talk behind closed doors, they will say it friends. They will say it to...
You do hear that with quite a few PR scrubs about, oh, they should say this all the time. Then eventually...
Why did you not beat that out?
Don't ever say that again, whatever that is, because, especially in this day, to your point, it's not safe saying in a company anyway, because it will leak out.
Imagine politically, if he's knocking around you, a government, and you're saying, well, a lot of crap this country is, you know, if that...
I'm trying to think, I'm sure there are some examples, I just can't think of the top of my head, of people who would say stuff, you'd be like, if anyone actually ever heard that.
What PR disaster have you got for us, Andrew?
I'm fascinated by this. I don't know if you've been following the Jess Daly stuff. He's been caught up in the Jeffrey Epstein scandal from time as a private banker at J.P. Morgan, now at Barclays. And Jess Daly, when the stories came out about you were palling around with Epstein on his island, was kind of, I had no idea about any of his behavior. And knowing that this was part of a legal process and all their correspondence would end up in open court. And sure enough, they've started printing the emails now. And it is all euphemisms about young women dressed up as alcohol and being on the island. And you're like, you knew this was coming. And yet you tried to...
Is that just hubris?
But this is the thing where you have to know where the information is and how it's going to come out.
Yeah.
And even to this, like, his PA would have been copied in or had access to all these. Like, there's always someone. So you have to know, I'm going to either eat shit today or I'm going to eat shit down the road. And if I eat it down the road, people are going to look back to when I lied to them about everything being hunky-dory, and they'll hate me for that too.
It can be a double portion of
it. At some point, you just have to, like, I'm done.
Yeah.
And the only way I can do this is it was wrong. You know.
That's got to be a difficult thing for somebody who's in PR to tell somebody.
Especially the guy that's worth billions at the top of a bank.
Yeah. You've got to take this.
You're gone. And this is like the worst of all. Like, talk about conversations you don't want to have on subjects you don't want to have. Like hanging around with a sex trafficker, swapping stories
about that.
But the fact that these people think it was normal to go to a private island anyway.
With all these young women, it's amazing. This is fine. No, but it's just this point of like it will get out. If it's not the pilots on the planes, and I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but like all these people knew about Epstein. Yeah. Like, why do you think they hung around Jeffrey Epstein? Like, because he gave that good financial advice? Yeah. No, they're a dime a dozen, these people. Like, we're not stupid.
Mick, have you got anything that we can end on that's a little bit light?
Well, my favorite one that I was researching, where things have...
There you go, doing homework.
When the PR people come out fighting and it's good, is...
He's showing you up.
Now, Tide Pods, are you aware of these things? I think it's like aerial washing tablets, you know, the squishy
Never
ones you put in with your clothes.
All right.
So
All right.
What happened was, so there was this viral thing where kids had started eating them. So no fault of the company.
No.
So the company then said, oh, this is bad. It's not our fault. We'll have to do some good PR to stop kids eating these things. These are bad. So what they did was they went out there. They said, this is very unexpected. What you do, it's not a fun thing. Stop doing it. They got a bloke called Rob Gronkowski, an NFL player.
Gronkowski. Right?
That's him. He plays for the Atlanta Mooses, I think it is. One of those.
It was the New England Patriots.
Yeah, that's
the Tampa
right.
Bay Buccaneers.
And he, well, what he was, the funny thing was, he's a tight end. Now, what he should have said was, you end up with a tight end if you eat these things. I think that's what he should have said. But they got out. That was the PR thing that they got out, this big, all-heroic American footballer. And that stopped it, and that helped them. And I thought that was a PR. That was where PRs are doing good for the world, unlike you two.
Your parents might have told you to clean your mouth up with soap when you're being naughty, but that's not what we meant. So please use these appropriately.
So tighten up your end and get out.
Or that.
What I love is these adverts that say, keep these away from children. Don't even let them look at them. What? Listen, guys, thank you. It's been absolutely brilliant to be back with all three of you, Andrew McDougall, Giles Kenningham, and Mick Booker. Thank you very much indeed. That's all we've got time for, but we'll be back with more inside scoops from the world of news and politics next week. In the meantime, don't forget to tell all of your friends about us. After all, no publicity is bad publicity. See you next time. Hacks and Flacks is presented by me, Petri Hoskin, produced by Amanda Redman, and brought to you by Trafalgar Strategy. If you want to get in touch with your take on the current news climate, you can do that by emailing us at hackflackpod@gmail.com. And don't forget to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you next time on Hacks and Flacks.